blagoslov. Nešto nas je malo manje zbog viroze, jel tako? Ali evo, skupili smo se. Ovaj tjedan smo, ja sam isto bio bolestan i u krevetu i temperature malo, ali evo, hvala Bogu, brzo sam se izvukao, moji su još uvijek se izvlače ili su tu negdje djelomično su se izvukli. Tako da ovaj put ćemo, umjesto da imamo službu klasičnog tipa, tako gdje ćemo propovijedati, imamo jedan video koji stoji pripremljen i čeka već neko duže vrijeme ovakvu priliku. Bekica je napravila titlove na svjedočanstvu jednom. Inače, to je svjedočanstvo koje Anči najviše voli. Ja sam ga poslušao što aktivno, što pasivno, na desetine puta, ne znam koliko, jer ona ga svako toliko ponovo sluša. Kaže, jučer mi kaže, baš sam mislila da ga već dugo vremena nisam poslušala, možda 2-3 mjeseca, pa bi htjela ponovo. Tako da je jedno od njoj omiljenih svjedočanstava i jedno malo drugačije svjedočanstvo nego što smo do sad slušali, jer u pitanju je čovjek koji kad je bio s bratom Branhamom nije bio vjernik. Jer brat Branham ga je birao kao svoje društvo, kao neko s kim će ići u lov, iako nije bio vjernik. Cijelo to vrijeme. Tako, tek na kraju se obratio i ima jako zanimljivu priču. Jako puno vremena su proveli skupa. Tako da imamo titlove, pa ćemo ga staviti na internet. A, jedna obavijest. Prevedena je propovjed Rođak otkupitelj. Nataša prevela. Znači, prevela je na hrvatski, ne na irski. Tako da, neka je Bog blagoslovi, ako bude pogledala, evo, drago nam je za njih da i dalje se nešto radi. I to je jedno od ključnih propovjedi brata Branhama, jedna od velikih istina koju je propovjedao o knjizi o Ruti, jel tako, o biblijskom principu Rođaka otkupitelja, 60. godine propovjed, jednom propovjedana, ali ostala je zapamćena, jel tako, na koju se često vraćamo, tako da imamo za poslije službe da uzmete svoj primjerak. Evo, toliko za uvod. Prije nego što krenemo sa nekoliko pjesama i sa svjedočanstvom, možemo pognuti glave. Naš dragi Gospode i Bože, evo, hvala Gospode zato što se osjećamo dovoljno dobro da smo tu. Gospode, što si nam dao zdravlja i dao oporavak, Gospode, za naše koji su pod virozom ili temperaturom, prehladama i slično, molimo te, Gospode, da daš brzi oporavak. Nekako, Gospode, ova godina je, što se toga tiče, nešto nezgodna, Gospode, stalno nekakve prehlade, kašlji, nikako da se toga ljudi riješe, Gospode, i molimo te da nam daš svima tvojim vjernicima koje ti imaš ovdje, Gospode, brzo oporavak i da ti sa punom snagom ponovno služimo. Gospode, nismo htjeli propustiti današnji trenutak i današnju priliku da se okupimo, Gospode, iako nemamo klasičnu službu, Gospode, htjeli smo poslušati svjedočanstvo. Molim te da ti progovoriš kroz to svjedočanstvo, da odgovoriš na naše potrebe, Gospode, da podigneš našu vjeru i da nas blagosloviš. I mi tebe, Gospode, svojim slavljenjem, riječima i životom u ime Isusa Krista molim. Amen. Pozdravamo se. Muzičare, pozdravamo.
Oh.
kratki komentar prije nego što poslušamo svjedočanstvo. Ono što ponekad ljude smeta, odnosno što ljudi prigovaraju, naravno ne ovi koji sjede tu s nama danas, možda neko ko bude gledao na internetu ili ne znam, zašto uvijek kad pričamo o proroku, pričamo o pričama iz lova, ili tako? I onda ih to smeta kao lov ovo, lov ono. Pa ako čitate u Bibliji, kad pričamo o apostolima, non stop pričamo o ribolovu, ili tako? Na ovoj barki, na onoj barci, na Galilejskom jezeru, u Kafarnaumu i tako dalje. Zašto? Jer su ljudi bili ribari, jel tako? I Isus je našao ljude koji su bili ribari, koji su lovili ribu, tako su živjeli. I većina toga što je bilo vezano za prvi Kristov dolazak možemo staviti u ribolovne priče, jel tako? Bacili su mrežu na ovu stranu, nisu lovili ništa, pa su bacili na ovu stranu, pa su lovili puno. Jel tako? Pa da ste slušali Petra ili Ivana ili apostole, oni bi pričali kad smo išli u ribolov ovdje, pa sjećate se onaj put kad smo išli preko Galilejskog jezera, pa Oluja, pa onaj put kad je Isus uzeo barku, pa sjedio i nas to bi bile priče o Olujama, Galilejskom jezeru, Galilejskom moru, ribama, barkama i sl. Tako slušate svjedočanstvo o proroku, dosta toga će biti vezano za lov. Znači, neće biti vezano za kompjuterske programe, jer Branham nije bio programer, jel tako, neće biti vezano, ne znam, za Marija, oprosti, za prodaju guma, jer nije prodavao gume, jel tako, ili tako nešto, jel tako, znači, čovjek je bio čovjek prirode, kao što je Ilija bio, bio je čovjek prirode i priča o prirodi. Da ste slušali Ivana Krstitelja, on vam ne bi pričao, ne znam, o mjenjačnicama u hramu, on bi vam pričao o skakavcima, o divljem medu, jel tako, o zmijama, gušterima, i onome u čemu je on živio, bio je Ilija, koji je imao doći, jel tako, prije prvog Kristovog dolaska i priča o prirodi. Znači, zato da mislim da ljude ne treba smetati priča o lovu, a druga stvar što je danas, u našem jednom jako pametnom i modernom vremenu, lov je, jel tako, kao nešto krvoločno, odnosno, kako je mogao ubiti jelena i pojesti. I onda taj isti čovjek koji se zgraža, kako je Branham ubio jelena na jedan humani način i pojeo ga, ode u Konzum ili ne znam, Lidl ili šta god i kupi kilo janjetine, jel tako, ili dva kila teletine i tako dalje. I ne zamišlja da je to tele ili janje bilo jedno malo slatko tele koje je neko ubio u nekakvoj klaonici, u nekakvoj mesnoj industriji na mnogo manje humani način. Ako ne znate kako to izgleda, utipajte malo kako izgleda klaonica perad ili negdje u industriji, pa ćete vidjeti kako ih vješaju onako serijski na one vješala i onda ih gone po onom pokretnoj traki i stroj sječe glave ili kako god. Znači, i mi smo svi, ali tako, to nam je jako, kao vidi, Bill Branham otišao u prirodu, lovio životinju i pojeo, kako je on. Ljudi onda prigovaraju da je to krvološno, a to što oni jedu meso, i treba da jedu meso, jer je Bog, Isus je jeo meso, Isus nakon svog uskrsnuća je pojeo meso, nije, ribu, jel tako, dali su mu komad pečene ribe, nije bio vegetarijanac, ni prije, ni poslije, tako da kršćani ne trebaju biti vegetarijanci, jel tako, možda neko iz zdravstvenih nekih razloga mu nešto ne paše, ne znam, kiselo, slano, slatko, začinjeno, tako dalje, pa izbjegava neku hranu, to je okej, okay, to je, razumijem, ali da neko napravi ideju da je, ne znam, jesti meso nekršćanski ili da je više kršćanski ili duhovno jesti, ne znam, samo vegetarijanstvo, to su gluposti. Ako hoćete dokaz o tome, bila je jedna žena koja je došla u bratu Branhamu u red za molitvu i tražila je da se moli da dobije bebu. Branham joj je rekao da će dobiti bebu i ona godinama nije dobila bebu. I onda je došla ponovo njezin muž ili ona, ne sjećam se, na molitvu. I Branham je rekao da hoće dobiti bebu i da je s njom sve u redu. Jedino što s njom nije u redu su ti izmi, kaže, to što ne jedeš meso. Znači, ona je, kaže, to jedino što nije u redu s tobom, ta tvoja filozofija koju si ti izbacila da jedeš meso ili tako dalje. I onda i ta ideja koju ti živiš i slično, ta vegetarijanska, to je bilo jedino što je prorok njoj prigovorio. Tako da, Isus, kad sam spomenuo, nije bio vegetarijanac, jeo je meso čak i nakon uskrsnuća. E sad, ja mislim da smo mi toliko danas se otuđili od prirode, to svi mislimo i znamo, ali toliko smo se otuđili od prirode, da nam je, ne znam, da bih da živimo na selu, otako, i da imamo kokoše, uzgajali bih da ih jedemo. Otako je moja baka, ako bi išla, hoćete za ručak sutra pohanu piletinu, da, pohanu piletinu, a onda bi ona uzela nož ili sjekiricu, otišla u dvorište i ulovila kokoš koju bi kasnije ručala. E, to je nama danas jako krvoločno, tako kako čovjek to može napraviti, ali otići u Konzum, to nije, to je sve okej. Tako da, puno puta po internetu čitate takve bezumne komentare o proroku što je bio lovac. To je najprirodnije, znači to je najnormalnije uloviti životinju i pojesti je, jer nešto mora umrijeti da bi mi živjeli. Jel' tako? Nešto mora umrijeti da bi mi živjeli prirodno i duhovno. Krist je umro da bi mi živjeli duhovno i živimo u vremenu gdje nešto mora umrijeti da bi živjeli prirodno. Jel' tako? Bila to i salata, jel' tako? Jadna mala salatica. Tako da živimo toliko smo puta čitali takve neke komentare da je to već neshvatljivo da ljudi mogu, da smo se toliko otuđili od nekih najnormalnijih, zdravih, prirodnih stvari. U prirodi, ako živite, nešto ulovi neku životinju i pojede da preživi. O tako. I čovjek isto. Tako da našem vremenu kažu da negdje su vodili djecu na ekskurziju u Njemačkoj i da su djeca ostala šokirana kad su vidjeli krave, jer krave nisu ljubičaste. Znači, mi živimo u vrijeme gdje nam je normalno da je krava ljubičasta i da vidimo na omotu od Milkine čokolade, a nije nam normalno da krava nije ljubičasta. Znači, toliko smo neprirodni. I onda kad neko ulovi životinju i pojede je, mi se zgražamo kao čovjek šta to radi, jel tako, ili nešto. Tako da želim te odmah priče demantirati. Odmah na početku, brat Branham kaže, znači da on nikad nije ubio životinju, a da je nije pojao. Ili dao nekom drugom da je pojede. I znamo da pri kraju svoje službe je čak izbjegavao da ubije životinju i da nekom drugom, jer bi ispalo kao da previše lovi životinja. I onda se ograničio da broj životinja bude manji, da je uvijek je to bila životinja koju je on pojao. A pravi razlog njegovog lova nije bio zapravo ni sam lov, nego je bio da se makne od ljudi, da se makne od pritiska, od ljudi koji su kampirali u njegovom dvorištu ili u njegovom pred kućom, ili koji su kucali, zvonili po noći, tražili molitvu i tako dalje, da se malo odmori i da bude sam sa Bogom. To je bio njegov pravi razlog i on kaže ponekad mi to zovemo lova, zapravo ja ne idem uopće da lovim, nego idem samo u prirodu da budem sam s Bogom. Tako da, ovi komentari i ova priča, sad u svjetlo ovoga ćete shvatiti da o čemu se zaista radi, a neki onako ovi moderni komentari di evo čitao sam di one udruge za zaštitu životinja su toliko aktivne da su danas životinje zaštićenije nego ljudi, jel tako? Znači ako neko ubije čovjeka niko neće prosvjedovati, ali ako neko ubije životinju, psa ili ne znam šta nije u redu, jel tako? Evo, nedavno je pas naljutio neku bakicu od 70 godina, ona ga malo istukla i neko je to vidio, snimio ili kako god, i sad bakicu ide na sud jer je tuže udruge za zlostavljanje životinja. Otako. A da je a ljudski život ili da se nešto tako desi, ljudi stradavaju, bivaju pretučeni, ono, nema nikakve udruge za zaštitu ljudskih prava. Otako. Tako živimo u jednom totalno nakaradnom svijetu koji je svoje prioritete i vrijednosti totalno raštimao. Tako da ovaj uvod je za one koji bi eventualno mogli kritizirati, da vide da stvari zapravo su sasvim najnormalnije u ovoj priči, gdje prvo hode u lovi životinju i pojede. Tako. I to bi bio uvod. Znači, svjedočanstvo je brata Dawson Reilly-a. Svjedočanstvo ima dva dijela, mi ćemo poslušati prvi dio. Imamo titlove i mislim da možemo ugasiti. Thank you.
special treat for us today. How many remember Brother Joe Rowley?
Know Brother Joe Rowley?
This is his son, Brother Dawson
Rowley. And if you listen to many of Brother Brown's tapes, you'll find Brother Brown talking about Brother Dawson and him going on hunts and different things like that. Well, when I first met Brother Brenham in the 60s, and he'd tell me some of the hunting stories, and I was so envious. I thought, Lord, I'm going to meet them people. They're going to be my friends one of these days. And so this is one of my very special friends, Dawson Rowley, Earl Williams, all those people that I ever never dreamed God would allow to cross our path. And here Brother Dawson's come this morning. I've asked him to give his testimony. He's not a minister, but it took a little pressure, not a whole lot, you know. I don't know if Dawson's ever done this. Have you ever done this before? Not many times. He's my type of man. He loves hunting. He loves the wilderness. And so I'm going to turn the service over to him, and I want to take the whole service. I want to video. Your children are going to hear things. I'm going to hear things that I've not heard before either, of some of the times and how he hunted with Brother Brown and how the Lord would reveal things that would take place and different things like that, to let you know that, man, this same God today is amongst us. See, Jesus, the Word, is amongst us. The Word and Spirit, the Word couldn't be here in our hour without the Spirit being with it, because they're one. The Word and Spirit are one. So it's a real pleasure to have him come by. My mind and heart has been on him for the last month, and trying to get numbers to call him, and he's been feeling the same way. So I believe, once again, our steps are directed to the Lord. And so at this time, I want to turn the service to Brother Dawson Rowley and let him come and share his testimony. And I know you're going to leave here blessed. By the way, Brother Dawson's only a couple of years younger than me. He may look younger than what he is. He's 62. I'm 64. And a miraculous miracle God did in his body healed him of cancer on his ear, just because he believed the Word of God. And so, Brother Dawson, if you'd come at this time, I'd like to turn the service to you. What a precious friend. Just stand up there.
Okay. I greet you in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ. I'm not a minister, and I'm nervous, because I don't do this. But I was driving along yesterday morning in Idaho, where I live. I had no thought of even being here. I didn't even think I could make it. I had to drive all night, and the Lord spoke to me and asked me to come today. And I didn't know that He would speak to Brother Jim. He spoke to my heart that someone needed a little lift. And I just came to visit Brother Jim, and he asked me to do this. And these things are very dear to me. The most precious thing in my life that's ever happened to me. So you'll forgive me if I'm emotional. And I'm a lion hunting guide. I still guide for a living, and I'm about to start my lion hunts. And I don't know why he sent me. He did. I know that he did. I got in here about 3 or 4 this morning, and they're very precious friends of mine, very dear to me. And the first day I met Brother Jim, we became bosom friends. And all through the years, we've remained that way. So I greet you, and it's a pleasure for me to be, and a privilege for me to be here. And I've jotted down a few things, and probably more things kept coming to my mind in the back room, and I jotted them down of things that went on. But before I do that, I'd like to testify of a wonderful thing that happened in my life. I've always been living in the outdoors I've had a very healthy life. Everything's been wonderful for health for me. And I went to Canada summer before last to work. And I finished my line hunts in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. And I took a construction job. Hunting doesn't do much in the summer, as you know. So I took a construction job way up in the Arctic Circle. And I started having some troubles. And we were working 7 days a week, 11 hours a day, and I'm no kid anymore, and the old heavy equipment was jarring me around, and I knew something was wrong, but I didn't know what. So I came home to Idaho, and I told my wife, I said, I've got to go to the doctor, which I didn't even have a family physician, because I've never been to the hospital, I've never been sick. I didn't even have a doctor. So I went into a little clinic there. I live in a remote portion of Idaho. It's kind of like a paradise, you know. It's really a nice place. And I went to this little clinic, and this doctor said, well, you have got to go see a specialist tomorrow. You're in real trouble. I can't tell you very much because I'm just a little clinic doctor, but tomorrow, I'll get you in to a specialist. Well, I went over to Idaho Falls, and the man told me, and he says, is your wife here? I said, yeah, she's in the waiting room. He says, go bring her in. You're going to die. If you get your things in order, you have let this go too long, you're in serious trouble. You've got cancer, and I can't help you. So, I brought my wife in. You always think it happens to somebody else. I went from perfect health to, he says, I'm going to die. So I said, well, I'm ready. But I didn't have things very good for my wife and daughter. I realized I didn't have things very, very good. So he told me what to expect, and he couldn't help me at all. But he could fry me and cook me and you know, do all the chemo and all this. I said, I'm going to go home and think about it. So I went home and pretty much in shock for 4 days. I had about 25 lion hunts booked, and I was about to go. I had taken deposits on these hunts and probably spent most of it. But I thought, what am I going to do? He told me my strength would fail. He told me that my endurance would wane, and that when I told him what I did for a living, he says, there's no way in the world you can do this. It's impossible. I was on snowshoes 90 days of winter in 4 foot of snow, chasing my hounds, treating these lions. And he said, it's an impossibility. He says, there's no way your body will stand up to that. So I went home. 4 days. I just walked. I paced. And I told my wife, I said, I'm going to go to camp. If I die, you know, I die doing what I love to do. I don't feel like I'm going to die. And so he prescribed these treatments, and they were horrible. But if I told you what he told me he wanted to do, I mean, it was shocking to me, you know. So I went home and got ready. I started getting ready to go to Jackson Hole to start my, up on the Hoback, to start my hunts. So I went in, and he said these shots were going to be $600 a piece, and that I ought to go cap chemo, and I ought to have all of these other things. Well, I've never considered myself a man of faith, but I've always trusted the Lord. And And I've lived in the wilderness for several years to get away from people. I'll admit it, you know, I just lived, I liked it out there. I didn't have any neighbors. We didn't have any fellowship, and quite frankly, I'll admit I missed some fellowship, but I had peace. I had peace in my home. I had peace in my heart. And I spent more time in the message than I'd ever spent. And of course, I probably had less money than I ever had, but I had a whole lot better. And everything was better. So, I told her that I was going to trust the Lord and that I wasn't going to have any treatments. I went in to see him, and I had my ear frostbit, and it was very angry, and I think I got it frostbit about four times. It's 30, 40 below up at Jackson where I hunt, and I ride a mule until the snow gets too deep, and then I get on a snow machine, so I got a frostbit, and every time I did, a little more flesh would slough off the cartilage, and pretty soon he said, it won't heal, you haven't got anything to heal. So, he said, we're going to have to cut that off, probably about half of it. And I said, well, just whack it off. I said, I'd do it with my knife, I could reach it. But I said, I don't know how to, I can't see good enough, so just go ahead and cut it off. And he said, all right. So he had his nurse take some pictures of it. And it was very big. And I told him, just give me the Spock look, you know. And I said, that'd be all right. You know, I never, so... Anyway, he says, he scheduled me in for surgery about 6 weeks, maybe five. Well, I told my wife, I said, you know, I was in camp. She was at home, and she said, what are you going to do? I said, well, I'll have to catch my lion early. I have 5-day hunts. I book a hunter for 5 days, and if I can catch him early in the hunt, then I get a day or two off. I says, I'm going to try to catch a lion in 1 or 2 days and send my hunter home, so I'll have 3 days, and I'll go get my ear whacked off, and then I'll have maybe 1 day of rest before I go back to work. So she says, well, how is it? And I said, you know what? I think it's healed. It's getting better every day, and I'm not bleeding on my pillow like I was. I think I'm getting healed. And so I said, you know, if it's healing here, it's healing in here. You know, I had prostate real bad, you know. And I said, I think I'm getting healed already. And so when I went in for the surgery, he said, something's wrong. I said, no, something's right. Yeah. He said, look at the nurse, bring me those pictures. Well, they show this big angry deal, and here it's a little thing like a dime. He said, cancer doesn't heal. And he said, something's different. He said, it's better than when you came in here. I said, yes, sir, it is. And I told him that I'd been praying. So he went ahead, and he did, as you can see, my ear didn't get whacked off, and there's no cancer there. And I haven't had any sickness. I had no weakness. I had the best lying season I had ever had in my life since 1963. I feel 28 hunters, one every 5 days. And he gave me bountiful blessings. I had the finest winter I ever had. Every time the other hunters would complain about not finding lion, I would catch two or three. I had 8 days I filled on the first day. I had 5 multiple lion days. I had 1 3 lion day. And all of those things, they don't happen to very many people. And I'm supposed to be getting older and slower, and the kids are supposed to be getting better, and I've just be blessed me. And I want to throw another little testimony in here. I had heard a lot of stories about how bad moose are, but I had never had any problems. I've been around them over in Jackson for several years now, and I never had any close encounters that were dangerous. Well, one day, I had a hunter, and we had our snow machines parked, and my dogs were trailing a lion underneath, and a big lion come out of the Yellowstone Park and killed a moose. And I just showed him the kill. Well, with that bull was a cow, and she was all mad. and she had her mane all down, all had her head down, and she just started mowing and coming up there. And this guy said, what are we going to do? I says, we're probably going to get in trouble. He says, well, I'm leaving. And he jumped on his snow machine and took off through just a bunch of brush because there was no trail. We're up there with just my dogs. And so when he left, I was standing between him and left me exposed. And I'm in 4 feet of snow. I took one step and I went up to here. I couldn't move. And all these thoughts came through my mind. I said, well, this is how you got it. You've always wondered, this is it. I mean, there was no, I had nothing. I had no protection. I had no, and she came. And she was about 18 inches away, still coming full. And that guy realized he'd left me in a bind, and he turned around, and he came back, and he ran his machine against her side and ran over my leg. And it took the cow about 4 feet past me, and then I grabbed a little lamb, and she went on. I know, and I all I did is that I just uttered the Lord, help me, Lord, I'm in trouble.
Yes.
And so I knew he saved me. I knew it.
Yes.
Because she was 1,500 pounds right here, and I'm here, and her head's this far from me. I knew. So about 2 days later, I was going down the trail, and I thought, this would be a terrible place to meet a moose. And I went around the corner, and there was a moose and a calf. And I was in a narrow, winding trail. And there was no place for me to go and no place for her to go. And I sat there and I prayed for an hour. So she tried to walk away, but the calf was getting tired, and she was getting madder and madder. I sat there for 1 hour, which the 1 hour prayer doesn't hurt you, you know. So I prayed. I couldn't physically lift this machine up and turn it around on this narrow trail. There was no place to go. I couldn't climb a tree. I just sat there praying. She went about 50 yards, and finally she decided that she wasn't going to go anymore because her calf couldn't go. So she sat there rolling at me and throwing her mane down, and I thought, well, I got in trouble again, you know, and I just prayed. So she left about 50 yards, and I moved up about 50 yards. Finally, the calf, for some reason, got off the trail, and she turned her head down and was looking off, and I prayed the Lord would give me safety here, and I crowded her at the bank, and I think I hit her with my forearm. And she could have kicked my head off, but she didn't. I got on by, so I knew again. And these are just a few of the things. One time I got stuck in a real bad avalanche, and I couldn't get me or my machine out, and the avalanche had covered us up. And I knew it wouldn't go, and I knew I couldn't dig it out without sliding. So if I created the void to get my machine out, I was going to let this above me slide down and smother me. And I sit there thinking about everything I could do. And I thought, well, you didn't ask for help. And I asked the Lord to help me. And the machine buried, started, and pulled out of that. It's impossible. If you've ever been on one, they won't do that. They won't do it. And it started, and went ahead, and it's not even a powerful machine. But anyway, the Lord took me out of it. And I wanted to witness of those things before I began. And that's that last winter.
Yeah.
That's just last winter. I would like to pray a minute. Our kind, gracious Heavenly Father,
I thank you, Lord, for all your blessings. We're so unworthy, Lord. I ask, Lord, as I attempt to give witness of those things that I've seen and heard about Brother Branham, that you bring the things to my memory that are pleasing to you. May they be accurate, Lord. It's been a long time. Help me, Lord Jesus, that I may say the right thing. And if you sent me here, me here, as I believe you did, may your purpose be accomplished. And Lord, bring those things to my memory accurately that I have need to say this morning, and bless to those that may hear it tomorrow and be with us, and may your presence be with us. Forgive us for our shortcomings. Be with us throughout this day. Bless your bride around the world, and we'll give the praise in Jesus Christ's name. I apologize. I have some notes here I want to refer to, and I'm not a speaker, and I will blunder around here, but if you'll bear with me, maybe I can bring up some of these things here and give witness. I first met Brother Branham when I was 7 years old. I was in my first meeting when I was 7 years old. We're in Baldwin Park, California. The year was 1947. We came and sat toward the rear of the building. My grandmother was in Arkansas. She was a Pentecostal lady and a real Christian. She had lived her life raising 14 children. My mother was one of 7 girls and 7 boys. And she had heard of, she couldn't go because she had so many children. She couldn't go to the meetings in Arkansas at the time, in Russellville. So she heard a lot of her friends. And so she sent word to my dad and mother in California. Dad got drafted into the Navy, and he had to go work in California. He said, if you ever get a chance to hear this man, some wonderful things happened. So Dad had only been a Christian about 2 years, a year and a half. Mother had been a Christian the whole time. And my dad had backslidden and was in the world. And he had just come in and received the baptism of the Holy Ghost in Pentecostal church. And so they took us to this meeting. And a little girl sat in front of us, and she was maybe a year or two younger than I, and she had horribly crossed eyes, just horribly crossed. And a pretty little girl, and I just had empathy for her in my heart. I thought, oh, that poor little girl. Never did I know she had a prayer card. I didn't know that. I thought, oh, this poor little girl, she's looking around back over the seat, and they were just very crossed, you know. And so when she went across the platform and came back, and she said, she turned around and they were perfectly straight. And that was the first striking thing that I remember in Brother Graham's meetings. And as he would get in the area, we would go to my dad and mother would take us to those meetings for the next few years. And so we became acquainted with Brother Graham's healing ministry. We didn't know he was the messenger of the hour. We did not know there was a message. We just liked to go to the meetings and see the healings. We didn't have any knowledge of who he was and what he was sent for. Well, I got to meet Brother Billy. We laughed and talked, and I met him outside a lot. And wouldn't he should have been in, really. But anyway, I got to meet knowing him. He was young, and
anyway, he said, you know, my dad would really like to meet you and go and hunt with you. I said, oh, no, he wouldn't. he wouldn't like to meet me. No, that can't happen. I'm not a Christian, you know. And I said, that's not what he'd enjoy at all. Well, one day I came. I'd been up on the San Carlos Indian Reservation and got a really, really big bear. And I had this huge bear, one of the biggest ones I'd seen. Billy liked it, Brother Billy. He says, I got to tell Dad. So we went to Jim's Steakhouse down on Van Buren. That was the first time I got to, well, it was the second time. I was just, in 1959, Brother Sherritt, the man on the tapes, you'll know it, remember the name associated with the grafting of the trees, the orange and the lemon. Well, John Sherritt, my dad was working with him at the time. He came down to Phoenix and had just got a world record rainbow. And we saw it in the back of his car and in the back of the station wagon. And we got to go to dinner with him that day. Of course, we just sat there and be quiet. We didn't say anything, but we got to go. He and Sister Mita and my mom and dad and I and Brother Shep and his wife went out to eat at the Los Olivos Lodge there in Phoenix. That was a very wonderful time, a couple hours there, maybe four or five. And my brother Sherritt, he had a whole wing there set aside, and that was a delightful time. But as far as interfacing with Brother Ben and myself, I did not. I did other than just meeting. And so this time at Jim's Steakhouse is when I met him. We set up a hunt to go to Strawberry. And quite a few things happened on that hunt. Well, really, one of the things that happened up there was Brother Billy and I were shooting at 22s, and I became aware of how really superior the Brother Ben could shoot. I always thought, before I met him, I used to think I might shoot a little. I know Jim Ed, he thinks he can shoot too, but he can't. And I'm here to testify that I can. But anyway, he put these empty 22 casings on stumps, and he would just shoot them into oblivion, freehand, offhand, and he'd just do feats like that. He could strike a match. He could do all these things. Well, anyway, Brother Billy and I were shooting that. I don't know if they have them anymore. I can't remember if they do. The old 22 cartridge, they had a red X on them, Super X, so the Winchester. And we were shooting at the X. Well, I think I missed one way, plus or minus a little, and Billy missed the other way. And I don't mean to be disrespectful. I mean, Brother Billy. So Brother Ben said, well, I'll just show you boys how to shoot. And we're just messing around. The hunt was over. We're just shooting and messing, playing around. So he said, well, I can do two things here. Do you want me to shoot where the X intersects? Or do you want me to split your two shots? I said, well, it's easy to hit the X. Just split our two shots. So he took a little time and he shot, and we went down there. You could have just measured him perfectly. He was exactly between our two shots. We put it off center of the X. But he did that type of thing, and it was just unbelievable how he could really shoot. I mean, it was gifted, you know. It was beyond regular accuracy. He was just really so. I don't know if I have any notes on that hunt or not. I don't think I do. One of the first times that after that first time the four of us went, Brother Ben and my father and Brother Billy, and after that, all the times except two, All the other hunts that I was with him, except two of them, we were alone. Because he did it for one reason, and that was to rest and get away. And, of course, I was young, and I wasn't a Christian, and the thought came to me many times, I wonder why he puts up with going to me. And I really know why. You know, he would talk, he would be tired from not only the meetings got him tired and worn out, but he had a lot of personal interviews, and they would just wear him out and get his body and his mind tired and weak and worn out, and he wanted to rest. And so he could come up there, and I didn't ask him any spiritual questions because I wasn't spiritual. So he didn't break over into that realm. And he could really tell me hunting stories, and I've been known to tell one or two. And so, you know, I just told hunt stories. I used to hang around with a bunch of government hunters, lion hunters in Utah. So I knew a lot of famous people. Most of them are dead. And but they, at that time, they weren't. And I told him all a bunch of stories, and he'd like to tell me about his hunts, which I just loved. I sincerely loved them. Yeah. I mean, I loved his African stories, his Canadian stories, and his squirrel hunts. He could tell me about a squirrel hunt. I had just as much fun as I did an African hunt, you know. But anyway, I realized that he was using it as a rest. And another thing I noticed, when he'd be tired, he wouldn't hardly eat when he first, maybe only half a cup of coffee and part of pick at the food. And after 3 or 4 days, after laughing and sitting up till late at night, he would eat full course meals. But at first he might couldn't even half a piece of toast. He didn't eat much. He was very tired, very warm. And many times, a lot of people will never know how physical and how double tough he was. He would sit up telling me stories till 2 or 3, and we'd get up at 4 or 5, and we would walk 30 miles. And I was in my prime. You gotta remember, I was young, and I could trot all day. I could trot, literally hit a long trot all day long, up and down. Here he's 49, 50 when I met him, and up to about 56 there. I mean, you know, he could walk a young man into the ground. He was extremely, extremely physical. And yet, he'd be tired and worn out, and he would do these types of things. And it amazed me, his stamina, and how one time, which brings me to mind a story, maybe I have it in here. I don't know if I do. We were up at Strawberry. No, we were in the control road. Pine. We were at Pine. And we hit a bunch of lions in a bunch. There were 3 or 4, and they went everywhere. Dogs went everywhere. Went up to the Boy Scout camp. Went up to Milk Ranch Points. They went up on the Pine Creek Trail. And I took off running. And I ran in, and that's Manzanita up in there. And if you've ever been in there, Manzanita, you can't see any tracks. There's no... It's heavy, it's thick, you have to crawl through it. You know, Manzanita doesn't bend. You have to do the bending, because it is where it is. And you crawl through that stuff, and it barks you, and it tears your clothing, and it's rough. And then the leaves fall down, and it has a mat of leaves, and you can't track. You can't even tell anything. So I had gone about, I think it's about 7 miles by the way of the road to a Boy Scout camp, and a lion and the dogs would run through the Boy Scout camp, and they had all the kids in the mess hall. Well, I thought, and my dogs were treed up on this big rim, and I thought, well, I better go back and get Brother Brown, because he don't have any clue where I am, because I've been gone several hours running, and there's no way in the world that he knows, because he can't trail me. Even though he's a good tracker, I knew he was a good tracker, but he couldn't track me. And here I have come through side hills and ridges and brush for 6 or 7 road miles, which is probably 9 or 10 or 11 miles away I went. And so I started going backwards, and I looked way up there, and I saw Brother Brown. He was about 2 miles away, and I thought, man, he's about where I was. And I just sat down, and I watched him, and he walked everywhere I went. And he came up to me, I couldn't believe it. I could not believe my eyes. Here he came through untrackable waste, and he went exactly, and I know where I was. I knew where I went, because I tried to pick the best, and I knew where I'd go the same one again, you know? I couldn't believe it. He came exactly up to me, and he smiled, and he said, "You didn't think I'd get here, did you?" I said, "No, sir, I didn't." Well, let me tell you something. I'm going to jump back 2 hours. I had had two dogs that I knew nothing about. A man called me up and asked me to try them out. And I didn't know anything about them. I didn't know if they were gridlion dogs. I didn't know if they chased deer. I didn't know what. Well, when dogs were running on this line track, and these two dogs took a fox, and I knew they did. I saw the fox. And they caught the fox and killed it, and I thought, boy, that's fast. You know, they may not be any good, but they sure are fast. And they killed this fox, and it was about a quarter of a mile off of this trail that I picked to go follow my dogs. Then I heard them again. They jumped, there was a pair of foxes. They jumped the other fox and killed it, and it was about another eighth of a mile away. And this is just down in the weeds, down in the brush. I said, well, they're good fox dogs, you know. And I was kind of amazed that they could catch a fox and kill it. And I didn't say, you know, no, of course. I talked to him. He said, "You didn't think I'd be here?" I said, "No, sir, I sure didn't." He said, "Boy, wasn't that something about those fox? It's humanly impossible for him to know where that fox was. I was right there, so I could see it. And if I hadn't stepped down where it was, I wouldn't have seen it." He said, "That was something about those foxes, wasn't it?" And you can imagine what it did to me. You can just imagine. I just tumbled in my mind all day long. Just tumbled over and over. I just couldn't grasp it. I just knew something different here that I ever even imagined. If anybody ever thinks of it, you hear these people talk about Brother Branham when he was under the anointing. They don't know very much about that, you know. He, the Lord was with me all the time.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yes.
And he knew a lot of things all the time. But one time, the first morning that Brother Ben and I was going from a Payson, first day by ourselves, nobody else was with us the first time. We got stopped and checked by game warden. Now I go months without it, maybe years. But Brother Brennan had a out of state license because he was from Indiana. He hadn't moved to Arizona at the time. And so he had out of state license, so he was legal. I had my guy's license, and we were all legal. So he checked us. We got out. Put our stuff on the hood of the truck and visit with him a little. And the guy's name was John Herngrove. And he was really aggressive, you might say, and pretty much of a smart aleck, fair game warden, you know. So we went on. And I was starting to get irritated, and Brother Brandon told me to calm down. And I wasn't very calm then. And I wasn't old, you know, and fat. But anyway, he said, telling me to slow down, calm down, and be nice. And I was getting, he was harassing us, really, what he was doing. So we went on, and that afternoon, he did it. He stopped us again. I said, "You checked us this morning. You know he's from Indiana. You know we got everything. We don't have to show." Brother Ben said, "Just show it to him." I said, "We don't have to do this." He said, "It's just be calm." He says, "How long does it take to show him your license?" I said, "Well, I'm not going to show him." I said, "He read it this morning. He's not that stupid. You know, he's sitting there listening." And so he says, "Show him your license." So we did. And I was aggravated at the guy, you can imagine. So we went on. Well, the next day, he started following us. So I said, well, I'll tell you what we'll do. That guy can't even think about walking with us. Let's just lead him along. I said, we're going to go to Washington Park, and there is about 2,000 feet there. Let's climb it 2 or 3 times. And drop off and climb it and let him follow us. We're not going to do anything. We're just going to lead this guy and we'll get this guy peace of wealth. We might catch a lion. I said, all right. So we took our dogs and went, this guy's following us. We came back. We're about 10 miles ahead of him. And he had to be tired, right? He had to be tired. So I said, I'm going to cut his tires. He said, you can't do that. I said, yeah, I'm going to cut his tires, you know, because he's following us trying to get us trapped. And I said, I'm cutting these tires. I said, he won't get back for a week because he's probably got one spare, but he don't have 4. He said, no, 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 you can't do that, you know. And so I was wanting to cut his tires and some other stuff, too. And he said, no, no, no. He said, you can't do that. And I said, all right. He said, I went over there and I looked at right by the truck and I saw this lion track and I hadn't seen it that morning. It was real big. It was really big. And so I was looking at this lion track. I said, look at this. I said, we didn't hit him anywhere today. Look at this lion. This is a nice tom. And he looked at me real funny, you know, and he says, how old is it? I said, well, I don't know. It's old, several days. I said, I'm not sure. I said, let me get this one dog. I had this dog named Boots. I said, Boots can smell the oldest track of all my dogs. I'll just let him smell it. So I put him on it, and he could barely get some scent out of it and wag his tail. I said, it might be 10 days old. He looked at me real serious, and this was another shock to me. He says, it's exactly 10 days old. Yeah. Anyway, I was just guessing, you know. I said, I don't know, it might be 10 days old. He said, it's exactly 10 days old. So another thing, too, he told me, he said, who's your best dog? I said, Boots. He said, he's not your best dog. He said, what about Eli? I said, he's my second best dog. He says, well, you just start watching him. He said, Boots steals everything Eli does. And I started watching it, and he was copycatting the other dog. And I had no, here I was supposed to be the one who knows about the dogs, right? I got to look, and I didn't know my own dogs. He had to tell me. Anyway, one day we were in the, I got a good lesson in shooting one day. It was snowing, we couldn't go in. So we're shooting out the window of the lodge. We're target practice, and I'm trotting over here, putting our targets on this tree. And so he said, go 50 paces and put this 22 Magnum casing into the bark with the casing backwards to me. So I went over there and pressed this 22 casing. It's 50 yards. He stands in the door of the lodge, offhand, and he drills this casing into the bark. I mean, it just disappeared. I trot back over there, and I says, yeah, I can't find it. He said, put another one up there. So I trotted over there, put another one. He did the same thing. He said, here, you try it. I said, oh, that's out of my deal. That's out of my league. So I stuff one in there, and I get his gun. It was a little bull barrel, 22 Magnum custom single shot he had made. And would really shoot, you know, for him. So I held up there, and I'm trying my very best to get my best shot. And I got alongside this casing, and I bent it. But it was still there. And the hole was beside it. And I was impressed. I mean, I'll be honest with you, I was impressed that I even touched it, you know. I went to Amy, he walked over there and he says, don't feel bad. I said, I don't feel bad, I feel pretty good. And he was consoling me on my bad shooting, you know. Anyway, yeah, I remember he said, don't feel bad. Yeah. One time, you know, I kind of hate to say it. Well, a lot of this I do, but I'm going to because I feel like it. But I do have something in common with Brother Jeanette. My mama was praying for us boys, my brother and I. We weren't doing too good. We weren't doing very good. And so one time Brother Brown came to the house, and he would usually, when he got out of meetings or if he got out of the interviews and he was tired, he wanted to rest, I told him I'd cancel all my hunters and he could come and I'd just take him. Because I, and of course I never charge you any money. I mean, I was just a kid and trying to make a living, but I didn't have any money, but I sure didn't want his money. I tell you that. I don't care how broke I was, I didn't want a dollar of that. And so I would never take him. And I was so waiting on the next time to see him that I couldn't hardly wait. And I could, so, and I didn't know why necessarily. I just knew I couldn't hardly wait to see him again. So if he called, I said, no, I don't have any money. And I said, you gotta go home. He said, what do you mean go home? You go home, I'll get you later. And I just be rude to these guys. I didn't know how to take care of clients, you know. And I said, you gotta leave. He said, what do you mean leave? I'm on, I got 5 days out. I said, no, something's come up. You gotta go. Brother Brandon said, somebody in camp? I said, nope, nobody's here. Come on, hurry. So, anyway, he came down to the house, and my mother was talking to him, and she was talking to me nervous about us and crying, you know. And I didn't know she said it. She told me later and said, telling him about what should she do. And he said, just don't nag him.
Yeah.
He said, they'll be there.
Right.
You don't have to worry. He said, they'll be there. But don't nag them. And no matter what you do and where you go and what happens, I mean, I know we still all have to come to the same message. We all have to come to that word. And none of us are exempt from it. You've got to have the Holy Ghost in your life or you're not going to make it. I tried it a long time with the head knowledge and you can do it. You have to have Christ in your heart, and you've got to have a personal experience with Jesus Christ, or you won't get there. But it's still a wonderful consolation to know he said it. It doesn't excuse my bad doing or mistakes I've made. It doesn't lessen any of that. We have to pay for everything we do, and we'll pay many times over. The price is great, but still, what a consolation deep down when you know it's priceless. Anyway, he said some more things, and one blessing that our family, all of my father, my mother, and my brother, and my sister, and I, every one of us has had visions from Brother Branham pertaining to our lives. And that's such a blessing in itself. Every single member of my family have been touched through the prophetic word of our messenger. And that's a wonderful privilege also, and I want to mention that, and how thankful I am for that. My brother, one time, my brother was going to go, and the doctor was going to cut on him for...
No. Is he going to do much time?
No.
Where's your aunt?
My brother was in the hospital and they were going to cut on him for a hernia. And Brother Graham called me up. And he said, look, don't let them cut on your brother. He doesn't even have a hernia, that's nerves. And he was already in the hospital. So I called down there. I said, Joe, don't let him operate. You don't have a hernia. He said, what do you mean? I said, Brother Graham said, you've got tests, your nerves are doing that. I said, don't let them cut on you. You don't even have one. So he went home. My brother went home. And he was supposed to have this operation the next morning.
And he told me, see, we would have never known. We'd have never known. They wouldn't have told us he didn't have it.
No, I wouldn't.
You know, they wouldn't have told us. And I wouldn't have done one thing, you know. But anyway, they told. He told him that. And I'm not going to get into my sisters. He did give a vision about her, and we'll get into that, or my mother and my dad. But another time, this is kind of interesting to me. And there was a trio, and there was a mother and two daughters, and they were all homemades living way out by Wickenburg, out in Morristown. They lived out by Castle Hot Springs. That's where it is. They lived way out, and they were really friendly women. They were nice, and they sang bluegrass. And they, one of them played a dobro, and one a mandolin, and one a guitar, and they could really sing good. I mean, they could sing good if you like that kind of music, and I did. Well, Brother Branham said, hey, you know where they live? I said, yeah, they don't have a telephone. They don't even have any electric. I said, I can tell you right now, they don't have a telephone. They don't even have power, you know. He said, can you get them? I said, yeah, it's not very far. I'll go get them. He said, well, I want them to sing at the Christian businessmen's deal at the Ramada, because those women, those businessmen women don't like them. They won't have them call up. So what you do, you have them over here in the wing, and I'll call up. I said, all right. So I go out to their house, and I said, you guys, Brother Brandon wants you to sing. And I'll tell you what song it is. He mentions it on tape several times, and I'll think of it in a minute. I'd like to talk it over. Okay, that's who was singing it. That's who they did it. So I went out there, and they were kind of country, you know, and they dressed pretty, kind of like me, you know, pretty plain. I started to apologize this morning about how I dressed, but that would be hypocritical because, of course, I got home the same. Anyway, yeah, but anyway, so I went and got these ladies, and I liked to hear them sing too. So I got them over there in the wing. So Brother Brown goes out, and he said, before I speak this morning, I want to have some people sing. And here they come out, these old ta-ta women who didn't just eyes roll back and they're dog. No. Yeah. But anyway, they came out and sang. That was good. So after he spoke, he was in the wing, and my brother and I. And, you know, okay, we were standing there, and my brother always remembers this. That's why I'm relating it. It's because it was so striking to my brother. Because that morning it had a lot of emotions, manifestations, and a lot of tongues and interpretations. And my brother and I were standing there, and he said, remember, he said, salvation only comes from the Word, not all these manifestations. And my brother has never forgotten, or I have never forgotten that. It was simple. At the time, we've heard it over and over now, but at that time, we hadn't heard that like that, you know. I mean, it was striking to us. Well, now, if you hear a lot of tapes, you hear that a lot, but we didn't hear that a lot, you know. And that was still when they believed in initial evidence and everything else, you know. He said that salvation just comes from the Word and that alone, he said, and not manifestations. He said you can't, and he said you can't put any importance on that. It's kind of the way you put that. One time, I was up in Utah with Brother Ramon. This friend of mine had just lost a child, and he's needing some money. He needed the money for the funeral. So he called me up, and so I was going to help him. And so I was talking to Brother Branham about it. And he said, I said, I don't know. I need to either buy this coat from him or buy a lion dog. He needs some money real bad, and he won't take a gift. He's too proud. He was a lion hunter, and he was trying to feed a family. And then lion hunters, government lion hunters, made $600 a month. He had 5 children. And that was what they were working for then at that time, for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife. And I said, he's way too proud, but he won't. It's the same man, by the way, if you hear the tape when he talks about the Jack Mormon.
Yeah.
Same gentleman. And we were at his house. I said, what do you think I ought to do? He said, well, you ought to get that dog. I said, all right. So he said, let's go down to the saddle shop. I said, why? He said, you know that story you told me about your saddle? You got in a bind and you got out of money and you sold your saddle a long time ago? I said, yeah. He said, I think it might be in that saddle shop all downtown. I said, that was 4 or 5 years ago. And it was about 60 miles from here. You know? He said, well, let's just go over there and have a look. And I walked in and my saddle sitting there on the back, you know? And I thought, he said, well, that's pretty reasonable, isn't it? Well, let's just get it. And I got my saddle back after all.
We did it.
And so I go back home. And Jerry says, why don't you take the colt? Brother Branham nudges me. He just told me to take the dog. And I thought, well, Jerry said, I'd rather you take the dog. Boy, I need that dog. Brother Branham nudges me. I said, I think I better take that dog. He said, well, think about it. I said, all right. So that afternoon, he said, will you take this horse? I said, yeah, I'll take it. Brother Brim, the room, he said, I think I'm taking the dog. Well, I'll tell you right now, that I won't go to a long story, but that colt had one problem after another and ended up crippled. And the dog went to a real good friend of mine, and he was good, and every day of his life, I envied him. Every 10, 12 years, I wish I had that dog. Anyway, I didn't listen, and I should have. One time, I'll tell you how dumb I was. Of course, I've never been. That's pretty bad. Anyway, I was really foolish. Brother Brown was trying to give me a hint. I dove hunted with Bob Ford. I don't know if you ever any of you know Bob Ford in Jeffersonville.
Right.
Old man.
Right, yes.
He looks like Colonel Sanders.
Yeah.
He don't have chicken. Well, anyway, Bob and I, we went good dove hunting every day. And so Brother Brown, he didn't like it. See, but I didn't know it. Nobody had ever told me. And I had an old man that had the palsy from France and been in World War I, and I gave him the doves. And I thought I was doing a good duty, and I'd take a couple of young ones, give him. I think the limit might have been 20 out a day, I guess. Well, I'd take about two and have Mom cook them for my breakfast, and I would just give him the rest. And him and his wife would eat on them, and I thought it was a good deal. I was just giving, you know. And so Brother Branham was trying to tell me, and he says, you know, we don't shoot doves. I said, I do. Oh, and then about halfway home, I go, oh, you dummy. You dummy. He's trying to tell you something. So I go over to Bob Ford's, and I say, Bob, we can't hunt doves anymore. He said, well, you may not, but I'm going to. He said, why? I said, Brother Branham said, we don't hunt doves. I said, I'm not going to shoot any more doves. He said, well, I'm going to. I said, okay. Because he's stubborn as I was, you know, and kind of cantankerous and everything. So, all right. Well, he was. I mean, he's not now. He's in the message and everything now, but he was kind of raunchy then. I remember he used to get after people's shovels and knives and stuff. You know, he was pretty neat. But he said, well, I'm not quitting. So when I saw Brother Brass, I said, man, I said, I'm really sorry. I didn't try to understand what you're trying to tell me about the doves. I won't shoot anymore. He said, oh, yeah. He said, and he was telling me about the dove. The Holy Spirit's like a dove.
Yeah.
So we're standing out there, and he said, it's like that you've got this dove on your shoulder, and if you do something, the Holy Spirit's sensitive, and if you offend it, he'll fly up on this little limb, but he won't be far. But then you get everything right and you'll come back. And he went just like this. And so I didn't realize he was trying to tell me that the representative of the Holy Spirit, and up here I'm just blazing away at him, you know. So I was gonna, I couldn't wait to tell my dad. And so dad, he was too tight to buy the shells, so didn't, he didn't have to worry. He don't buy any shotgun shells, they're too high. But anyway, I was gonna tell dad just in case he did, you know, break loose with a few shells. I was gonna tell him we can't do it, you know. And so I was standing, dad had a trailer park in South Phoenix at the time. We're standing outside working on something. And I said, Dad, you know, Brother Brown, and I was telling my dad this story. I said, Brother Brown was telling me about not shooting doves. And I said, I just blustered right over. Well, I do. And then I had to apologize. And then I said, here's what he was telling me. Well, and please, brothers and sisters, I of all people, I won't try to make something of myself. Please don't misunderstand me. I'm just witnessing what happened. And I'm not trying to be something, you know, because I know I'm not. But as I was telling my dad this story, you know, in Arizona, you have Sonora doves, and you've got mourning doves, and then you got white wings. But a pure white dove landed on my shoulder. My dad looks at me, and I was afraid to move. And he says, is that a pet? I says, no, Dad, I had never seen it before. And it flew up to a limb. And he says, my. And it flew back and landed on my shoulder. He said, what's the deal? I said, I don't know. I don't know. And then it flew away. And, you know, I don't think we talked about it for about 12 years or 15. My dad says, do you remember that white dove? He said, did you ever think about that? I said, I think about it quite a bit, Dad.
Yeah.
But, anyway, sometimes, you know, we can be blustering through and not be sensitive enough for things, you know.
Yeah.
I was pretty bad about that. Made you think how callous we can be, you know, and how thoughtless. One time I was in one time I was in Strawberry Log and it was cold. I had an old International Scout, and if anybody ever had them, they had the lousiest defroster known to man. It takes about 35-40 minutes if it's a frosted day. I had this old Scout and I'd already loaded the dogs. So I had a great big wart on my thumb. It wasn't hurting. It was just a nervous habit I had. And I was sitting there wanting this. It's about 4:35 in the morning. We're sitting there waiting on this defroster and everything. And I'm rubbing. I got that nervous habit. And I'm thinking, you know, I wish this thing would hurry up. He said, what are you doing? I said, oh, nothing. It just had done happened. In a couple of minutes, I was doing it again, and I didn't know, you know. He said, what are you doing? I said, nothing. And pretty soon, the third time, he reached over, and he took my thumb like that. That's all he did. He didn't say one word. And when he took his hand up, I didn't have a wart there. And it's been a slick, and I never had it. It never came back, and there's no scar there either. It was just gone. And all he did is touch it. He never said one thing. It was gone. And I just looked there. And he looked. And I looked at him. He just smiled. It was gone, you know. So the next day, we went down to a barn. We were staying in number 4 room at Strawberry Lodge. Lester Gray, this guy that had managed Strawberry Lodge, was a real good friend of mine. I would run a ticket for every hunter. And when my hunter would pay, I would pay my ticket, because we'd get our meals there, have our room, get our flats fixed. Because I had a lot of flats. And we would get gas and everything. And then I'd just get my hunt, pay up with him, and go to the next person. Well, Strawberry, at that time, he had a barn down below, and I kept my dogs in the straw. So when I went by this one dog I had, he was an Airedale dog named Homer, he was begging to go, and he'd been real sick, and he's passing blood, and I knew he was weak, and he couldn't eat, and I thought he was going to die, and I would let his, I always let him go. But that day he begged to go, and I said, you can't go today. And he cried a real pitiful cry, and I walked on by him. Brother Brown stopped by him. He just stopped. I selected the other dogs I was going to take that day, and usually I rest, take one back and rest the other half, and then the next day I reverse them so they're always fresh. And he said, why don't you let him go? I said, I can't. He's sick. He's not going to make it. He's too weak to make the day. If we get on a long chase, he won't even make it back, and he's too heavy to carry, and I don't want to carry him. I just want him taking. I went on through and let my dogs loose, and he's still down there. Just wants you to let him go. I said, let him go. So he unsnaps him. I went outside, put him in the scout. We went to where we're hunting. The dog got out to clean out, and he was just quivering and shaking and passing blood. And I said, explaining to him why I wasn't going to let the dog. I said, see, that's why I didn't bring him. And he walked over to him like this. And he put his hand right over his hips. And he didn't say anything. And he said he'll be all right. And that dog, he was five, that dog lived, when I was old, he was 11. At 6 o'clock one night, I was with a rancher. And the rancher shot a lion in a low cedar tree, and he didn't do a very good job. And the lion jumped on me. And Hobo went up and took the lion's bite in front of my throat. And the lion killed him at 11. And he never had another sick day until the day the lion killed him. And he saved me at that age of 11. And Brother Britton just touched him and said he'd be all right. And my dog was healed. He went on that day, never missed another meal. And he told me never sell the dog. I didn't tell you that too. He said, don't ever sell that dog. I said I won't. And that's what he told me that day. He said, don't ever sell that dog. You know good and well what he saw.
Yeah.
He saw it sitting in the barn before I wouldn't take it. He really saw it then.
So I'd say your life.
One time, one of the two times, other than that first time I told you, the only two times that anybody else went was once with Alan Mosley and once with Welch Evans. But the Mosleys were my friends, and we were visiting a lot, and they'd asked me to go with Brother Branham. And I said, well, I know, you know, a lot of people ask me that, and I'm not trying to keep you from him or anything, but he only told me not to ever tell anybody where and when we're going, and not to give his number to anybody, and never tell anybody, and I never have, and I never will. But they were good friends, and as you know, they had given Brother Branham the Jeep. They had made a Jeep and given it to him, and they loved him dearly, and they talked to me often, and Alan was one of my bosom friends before he was killed. And so he says, why don't you ask him? I said, I will.
And I love the other boys too, but I did like Alan better. You know how you are, you just have some people you just get along with a little better. And the other boys are fine boys too, not to say they aren't. But I just really did like Alan and got along with him a lot. And he, I don't know, he said, well, tell Alan he can go. I said, all right. I said, but he's seeding rice up in Northern California, but he's going to fly down and meet us in Utah whenever I tell him. I said, he said, well, don't have him come now because there's going to be a real bad storm. And it was just perfectly sunny, you know. He said, there's going to be a real bad storm. You couldn't fly in there. I said, all right, I'll tell him. I said, Alan, you can go, but you can't come. He says, what do you mean? He says, I'm coming. I said, no. And he says, I can fly in anyway. I said, no, don't come. So Brother Branham came and met me over here at the house and parked his Jeep out the truck. And then we always put the dogs in my truck and then we leave. And that day, my mother had a pot of chili on and she said, he never came in. We usually just met outside and leave. And he says, she said, I got a new apple pie done, or cherry, I don't remember which, and I get a pot of chili. I asked him if he wants a bowl before you go, so you don't have to stop along the way. And I said, I don't think he will, but I'll ask him. He said, yeah, that'll be all right. So we went in, and he sat there and he told me, he said, you know, something's going to happen on this trip that I'm not going to like. I'm not going to enjoy it. I said, well, Brother Brown, that's easy. Let's just don't go. I said, I don't want you to not be happy. He said, oh, you don't understand. If you see a vision, it has to happen. We couldn't help not going if we wanted to. I already saw it. It's going to happen. I said, well, let's just stay home. No, that did not work. See, I was just going to just saving the unhappiness. But he said, no, we have to go or then it's going to be wrong. So he told me what it was, two things. And so we went to Utah, and it was real pretty, pretty all the way up there, nice and sunny. We got in this little room, and he gave me a book. Now, this might seem strange to you. Here I'm with the prophet, but he gives me a book, and I can't put the book down. And I'm right there. We're on twin beds. I could have talked to him under my heart, but I couldn't put this book down. A prophet visits South Africa. I can't believe this. And I'm reading this book, and he's like, and he said, well, you can read that later. I said, no, I can't. But anyway, I remember him giving me that, and I couldn't put it down. So he said, you call Alan and tell him not to come, because he's going to be antsy and going to come anyway. So I called him in California. I said, you better not come. He says, is it storming? I said, nope, it's very pretty. He said, I'm on my way. I said, you better not. So he called the weather service, and they said, it's fine. Call me back. I'm coming. I said, no, you better. You can't. You can't come, Alan. He said, man, I waited for this, and I waited for it, and I'm coming. I said, no, you better not. So he didn't. And sure enough, we woke about midnight, and it was about a foot of snow already. And it was thick. It was one of those horizontal blizzards. He couldn't have made it 10 feet, you know. Well, anyway, I called him when it settled down, and he came on down, and we got this line. Well, I found a little set of line tracks, and I said, and I knew Brother Branham was wanting a bigger one, and so if we got a small one, he'd just pass on it anyway, so I figured, why tree it? So we went all day long, caught a bobcat, and it was too little, and we let it go. And that night, I said, well, we got that line track. We can go run it for fun if you want to. It's little, but it's the only thing we found today. He didn't say anything, and Alan said, yeah, let's go do it. He didn't say anything, and I didn't pick up on it, you know. And so I went over and turned my dogs on it, treat it. Alan had a big old gun there, and he shot a big hole in it, and he didn't like it. It was a pretty little line. It was just a year. So he said, well, I'm not going to take that little one. And I said, why not that? But Alan said, I'll take it. He said, I'd like that. I said, all right, take it. So the next night, there was two of them. And I knew that sibling
would be looking for its mate there the next day. So we went hunting the next day, didn't find any lion. I said, well, that other lion will be right there. I mean, I'm not going to catch it tonight. It was kind of on the way back into the motel. So I stopped by, dumped my dogs out and treated it. Well, I decided I'd just have some fun, so I climbed up in this tree and kicked this lion out. And I just kicked it in the chest and knocked it out. I felt so bad. I'm down there hissing my dogs, and they're choking this lion. And, you know, Brother Brown, he liked things killed humanely and quickly. And my dogs are choking it, and I'm down there hissing them and everything. And it fires your dogs up, see? So I'm down there training dogs, and I looked up, and he had a bad look on his face. And I thought, oh, I'm in trouble. He don't like this. But he already told me he wouldn't like it. And I'm down there letting him choke this lion. And I couldn't get him off then. You can't undo it. It's already a big mess. A big rat. You know, what could I do? I couldn't undo it. I just had to take my medicine, you know. He's mad at me, you know. Anyway, so I just goofed up. But anyway, they killed that lion. So I realized he didn't like it. And he told me later, he said, I like them killed where they don't suffer. You know, just if you're going to kill something, get it killed. No, don't do that. He said, that thing choked for 20 or 30 minutes, and you were liking it. I said, yeah, I know. I'm sorry. Anyway, so he kind of got after me about that deal. So I learned about that. And I'm going to pass over some of this, because I know it's long, but I'll do one more. This is very striking to me. In 1965, the construction strike hit here in Arizona, and my brother and I were working road construction, and we're out of work, and I got a chance to go to Oregon to hunt bear for the Forest Service, so I just went up there and hunted bear. Somebody has to do it, you know. And so I went up there and killed this bear out of the fur forest, and I had missed Billy Graham, because see, it's a first period of a long time that I didn't get to be with him. And I've been up there all summer. I want to describe this situation, and you'll see why it's so striking to me. My brother was married. I was single. My brother had a wife and a daughter. And they had a little house in Gresham, Oregon, between Gresham and Mount Hood. And I had my dogs tied just under some bear trees. And they had a lean-to on the back, which was kind of my way, you know. And I lived in this utility lean-to. I had a cot, and, you know, what else do you need, you know? And so I lived in this, me and the hot water heater out there in this little deal, and in the back of the house. And my sister-in-law would do my laundry and cook for me. And then I stand out there. Well, they lived on a hill. And up at the top of this hill, maybe 500 yards away, was a supermarket with a paved parking lot. And in the corner of the parking lot, out by the sidewalk, was a telephone booth. Well, I was laying there thinking, man, I'm going to go back to Arizona. I can't see Brother Branham. I caught all these bears for the forest. There's no more bear up here in this forest. I'm going to go. And the construction strike wasn't over, and I didn't know I was going to make a living, but I decided I was going to go home. And I'll be honest with you, I was alone. I was kind of alone with some of the stuff, and I was sitting there, it's about 10 o'clock at night, and I was laying on my cot. And my sister-in-law came to the back door, and she said, Dawson, you got somebody at the door. I said, there's no way. Nobody knows me. How could there be somebody at your door? No human in this whole town knows me. And nobody knows I live here, and we don't have a telephone. She said, I don't know, but there's somebody asking for you. I said, well, Bonnie, I don't know anybody. I'm not getting up. She says, come to the door and see what he wants. So I go to the door, and this guy says, hey, you got a phone call up there at the parking lot. I said, I don't have a phone call. You're crazy. Nobody, I don't even know the number of my own cell. But he said, look, man, I don't care if you take it or not. I'm just walking by it. I don't even know why I answered it. I answered the phone. And he said, go down the hill and ask for Dawson. I said, you're out of your mind. He said, no, there's somebody out there. I said, wait, I don't know who it is. Well, I don't even care if you answer it. You know, I said, well, I don't either. He said, but he did ask for you. Is your name God? I said, yeah. He said, all right. So I walk up this hill, and I pick up the phone, and Brother Billy said, Dawson, Daddy wants to talk to you. And he said, how you doing? I said, pretty good. He says, no, you're not. He said, you're not doing very good, are you? I said, no, sir. He said, I was on my way to Canada, and I thought you need a little cheered up. He said, why don't you meet me down here, and let's go on another hunt pretty soon when I get back in Canada. I said, okay, sir, I will. And I just wanted to share that with you, you know. It was, meant a lot to me. Well, I got two more pages. I'm going to bother about that. That's a time, my friend. I'm sorry. Just that.
No, I'm sorry.
Well, it's a privilege being here with you, and I hope maybe somebody has got something that would help you. And you pray for me, and I'm going to start my next season, and I obviously need a lot of prayer. So I covet your prayers, and God bless you very much.
Being around that gift, like I was, like Brother Dawson was, like different ones, when you'd start to tell him the dream, he'd stop you. Tell you the whole dream from beginning to end, how he was laid, how he had his hat pulled down, what the horses meant and everything, lets us know that that same God is alive today. And it gives us such faith to walk on. God knows that you might be living on a little lean-to and there's a telephone line right up there. And he can get a hold of you anytime you want. He's still the same. Brother Brown spent his ministry preaching to us, Hebrews 13:8. Jesus Christ, the same yesterday, today, and forever. Now that same God knows where we're at today, where we're going to be tomorrow. Our steps are ordered of the Lord. And it gives me great comfort to know that my Jesus and Cynthia Wednesday night made an outstanding statement. Says the Word. And says Jesus is here. The Word is here. And Jesus is here. The Word right now. They're one. So whatever you have need of, you need healing, ask Him to heal you right now. If you have any need in your body, you ask that presence that's here right now. That's how Brother Dawson got healed. That's how God healed me. I was miraculously touched Monday, deathly sick. And I kept saying, God, you're healing me right now. You're healing me right now. And I come home to service Wednesday night. And God, you've got to claim it. You've got to go claim it. God knows where He is. He's a healer. He paid for all of this. So these things we tell to, doesn't it help your faith? See, if you know where a little old mountain lion hunter was, sleeping in a lean-to, knew when that guy was going to be walking by, on a lion, and it's all ordained of the Lord. And that's how our life is. If you could take comfort in knowing that your life is so ordained in the Lord Jesus Christ that our life will just not be bopping along. And He don't know where we're at and what's going on. And I count it a real privilege for you children to hear. Just see, These are spiritual hunting stories. Just like David killed a lion. David killed the bear. And different things. See, God has everything under His control. And I thank Dawson for taking the time to come by. In fact, Lord willing, this May, He's going to help me get me a bear. And Lord, if you don't help me, don't help that bear. And, if we take Joshua along, we call him Bear Baby. Everyone stand up and look at Joshua. That's what we call Bear Baby, because they really like him. And they smell him out, no matter where he's at. But did you enjoy that? And it's a keepsake. It's a joy to hear those things. And why we've got men alive that can tell the testimony. And that's just a few, folks. We didn't even touch a lot of them. And, but Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And God sent that gift so it would help our faith in this last day. And will I find faith when I... Yeah, He's going to find faith. There's going to be faith in the bride of Jesus Christ. She's going to have the faith of Jesus Christ. Let's all stand. Donald, come and lead us in songs. And, oh, don't you feel refreshed to know that He's the same yesterday, today. And that same presence that was with that prophet is here. And if you will look for Him, you can begin to catch Him in the things that He wants you to catch Him. So, God bless you.
Noah had drifted on the flood many days. He searched for land in various ways. Trouble he had some, but they were from
sad pogledate malo i vidite ovaj komentar brata na kraju bi mogli i ponoviti. Vidimo da je Bog bio sa svojim prorokom cijelo vrijeme. I ljudi koji ne shvaćaju što ova poruka je, ne znaju zapravo kako je Bog potvrdio ovu poruku. Bez ove poruke, te nadprirodne prisutnosti, mi bi bili samo još neki filozofi oko Božje riječi, još neka denominacijska mudrolija ili nešto slično, ali tako gdje bi se nalazili i filozofirali, ja mislim da ovaj stih znači ovo, ja mislim da znači ono. Ovako imamo nešto što je Bog potvrdio i Bog je bio s tim jednostavnim čovjekom u ovim jednostavnim situacijama. I zanimljivo je, ako primijetite, da je Branham uzeo Dawsona koji nije bio vjernik iz razloga što mu je dosta sam dopustio da bude čovjek. Znači, doslovno od njega nije radio božanstvo, tako nije trčao i, ne znam, skupljao čaše iz koje je on pio za neke posvećene predmete ili nešto slično. On je bio, kaže, on nije postavio duhovna pitanja, nije bio duhovan, je li tako? Ali Bog je, odnosno prorok je znao da će biti kršćanin jednog dana, je li tako? I rekao je nemoj, roditeljima, nemojte mu dodijavati, bit će tamo na toj strani. I dopustio mu je da bude čovjek, dopustio mu je da se smiju, da se pričaju i drugi dio svjedočanstva je možda bolji jer se baš doslovno oslobodio malo ovako ove treme koje je bio i malo ovih nekih uvodnih stvari i drugi dio ako Bog da bi onda pustili sljedeći put. I zaista kad vidite proroka kakav je bio kao jednostavan čovjek, prilike koje su bile jednostavne, svakodnevne prilike, jel tako? Koje su proživljavali, kao što brat kaže, David je ulovio lava, je li tako? Ili pumu, jer oni zovu pumu planinski lav, je li tako, u engleskom. Znači, oni su lovili lavu. Mi sad, kad čitamo priču o Davidovom lavu, mi smo to, ne znam kako zamislili, je li tako, ali da je David imao pušku od 22 kalibra, je li tako, on bi pogodio tog lava kao što je prorokao, pogodio nekog drugog, je li tako? Ili medvjeda, ali slično ulovili, ili pojeli ili tako dalje. To su bili jednostavni ljudi kojima je Bog poslao ovu poruku i Bog je potvrdio na tako jednostavan način, ali na nadprirodan način, u jednostavnosti, ili tako. I to je ono što ne bi htjeli da propustimo. I ono što je zanimljivo u cijeloj priči, da ako Bog iscijeli psa, ili tako, koliko više će iscijeliti svoju djecu. Znači da onaj pas, ili tako, koji je mokrio krvi i koji je bio na samrti, proga samo dotakne i živi još koliko, jedno 6 godina poslije i spasi mu život. Kaže, nemoj ga nikad prodati. Jer je Bog mu u viziji pokazao kako će tako spasiti život doslovno. A Bog iscijeli psa. Bog iscijeli one tobolčane koji su došli i tako dalje. Tako da onda ponekad mi se toliko brinemo, toliko smo napeti, toliko ne znam nekako rješavamo svoje probleme u svojoj glavi, a vidimo da Bog to sve vidi. Bog je posložio situaciju, ima... I Sotona je htio ubiti tog psa, ali tako, da bi kasnije ubio doslovno. Bog je imao proroka da ga iscijeli, da kasnije spasi njegov život, ali tako. Tako, da bi mogao dati ovo svjedočanstvo. I ovo, ja mislim, ova dva njegova svjedočanstva su jedina koja imamo, makar je koje smo mi uspjeli naći. I ako volite ovakve stvari, a ja volim, imam onu web stranicu koju smo složili, na engleskom je brotherbranham.com. I na toj stranici smo do sada skupili jedno 80 ovakvih videa. Ne znam točan broj, ali prošli tjedan smo dodali još dva. Tako da ima jako zanimljivih priča, ima svjedočanstva od raznih ljudi koji su vidjeli na različite načine, koji su vidjeli ovu nadprirodnu prisutnost i nadprirodnu potvrdu ove poruke. Tako. I u svakodnevnom životu to je bilo više od samo riječi, to je bilo više od samo teksta, to je bilo više od samo službi, tako. To je bilo nešto što je bilo konstantno pratilo proroka i sve ove ljude koji su to doživjeli. Oni danas svjedoče, mi danas, zahvaljujući tim svjedočanstvima, možemo se osvježiti ili ohrabriti u svojoj vjeri da vidimo da Bog zaista potvrdio ovu poruku. Tako, od onog goluba koji je sišao kako mu prorok ispriča priču i ono mu se desi i tako dalje, vidimo da sve to što je rečeno zapravo nije bilo slučajno rečeno. Tako, nego je prorok znao zašto neke stvari kaže. Ako je znao zašto mu kaže Gagurne i kaže uzmi psa, ne konja, jel tako, kupi psa, a koliko onda više je Božja prisutnost znala zašto kaže neke stvari u poruci. I mi čitamo neke stvari, ne razumijemo ih i pitamo se pa zašto baš to zna prorok ili zna Bog zašto je poslao ili dao proroka da kaže baš to. To je ono što je potrebno za nevjestu u ovo vrijeme i nalazi se tu. Evo, toliko, kratko. Sad smo čuli samo pola svjedočanstva. Drugi dio je daje jednu cijelu sliku cijele priče. Možemo pognuti glave, da je Gospode. Gospode, tvoja riječ kaže da su blagoslovljeni oni koji vjeruju iako nisu vidjeli. Gospode, kad je Toma tražio da opipa, da vidi, Gospode, ti si najavio blagoslov onima koji će vjerovati iako nisu vidjeli. Gospode, mi ono što čitamo u tvojoj riječi u evanđeljima o ribarenju, o ribama, koje su tvoji učenici ulovili na tvoju riječ. O Davidovom, Gospode, lovu na psa, na medvjeda ili lava, Gospode, svim tim natprirodnim događajima, o Joninoj ribi, to su stvari koje čitamo u Bibliji, Gospode, nismo ih vidjeli, a vjerujemo ih. Gospode, kao što nismo vidjeli te biblijske događaje, nismo vidjeli ni ove događaje koje su se desili u naše vrijeme, Gospode, o kojima slušamo svjedočanstvo, a svejedno ih vjerujemo, Gospode. Sve ovo što vidimo, sve ove događaje, su tu natprirodnu potvrdu ove tvoje riječi koje su nam poslao, Gospode. Nismo bili u nijednom lovu, nismo, Gospode, doživjeli da, da je nama prorok otkrio tajne srca, ali sve ovo što slušamo, vjerujemo, ti si nam, Gospode, to dao priliku da se to snimi, da bude sačuvano, da bi mogli, Gospode, se ohrabriti u svojoj vjeri. Gospode, tvoja riječ kaže, blagoslovljeni su oni koji, Gospode, nisu vidjeli, a vjeruju. To je ono što tu smo, Gospode, tu smo kao takva grupa ljudi. Molimo te da nas ohrabriš u našoj vjeri, u našim potrebama, Gospode, ako ti, Gospode, iscijeliš životinju, koliko više ćeš iscijeliti svoje dijete, Gospode. Ako ti, Gospode, odgovoriš na potrebe takvih bića, Gospode, koje su stvoreni za hranu, koliko ćeš više, Gospode, iscijeliti, odgovoriti na potrebe onih za koje su te životinje stvorene da im služe. Gospode, molim te da daš vjeru našim potrebama da dosegnemo do tvojih obećanja u ime Isusa Krista. Amen.
Amen.
Amen. Ja. Ćemo otpjevati jednu pjesmu i onda bi završili.
Amo opet ono Isu.
Thank you.
ako Bog da, drugi dio, sljedeći put. Evo, Boži blagoslov.